Hey guys, welcome back to Uncommon Faith. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Amber.
And today we wanted to dedicate a whole episode to something very important to me. This month is Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month. And we decided to bring my good friend Allison Bergeron on to share her story, you know, so that we can help others going through similar things. I think Allison has done a great job on showcasing and keeping her faith in God during her whole experience. And it's something that we appreciate and that we wanted to shine a light on today. So, hey, Allison.
Hey. Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. Sorry it's taken so long. I was like, I had people in mind. I think you've been on our list, actually.
She has, yeah.
Yes, you've been on my list.
I am so honored.
Tell us just a little bit about you, what you do, and then we'll kind of just get into your journey.
Yeah, so I live in Montana in God's country and raised here. And you and I met when we lived in Colorado, but I've since moved mm-hmm. back. Currently work in the wheat and barley agriculture world in Montana, and stepmom to a going to be 14-year-old and married to a retired Air Force vet. So that's kind of where I'm at, and just in such a great place. Lots of healing has happened over the last 12 years. And just learned a lot and met a lot of wonderful people who I always call it like the secret silent sisterhood that I would not have met had I had not ever experienced mm-hmm. such loss.
So take us from the beginning, kind of like, you know, give us like our dates and like just kind of where it started for you and all that.
Yeah. So in 2010 was my first pregnancy. And it's been very easy to get pregnant, but it's been very impossible, literally, to stay pregnant. So I had my first loss in June of 2010, and it just wrecked me. I mean, I was like infant in my faith and infant, you know, just myself. It was early 20s, married to somebody in the military who was deploying on a regular basis and living in Colorado away from family. So I remember we went in for what was supposed to be our 20-week ultrasound to find out the gender. So we were on the highest of highs, and within moments was told that there is no heartbeat. And the baby was measuring at 17 weeks. So I remember like it was almost yesterday, but it was 12 years ago. So it feels like a lifetime ago.
Something you never forget.
Yeah, no, I remember like the lighting in the room and the feeling in the room. The ultrasound tech was like, she was more in tears than we were because we were just so shocked. And yeah, it was just devastating. Is at that point, I'd never heard anything about loss or, I mean, you know, people have gone through like SIDS or something, but losing at that early of a stage was just not on our radar at all. And I just remember feeling so rocked and so just alone. And I delivered, you know, once you're at that point, 17 weeks, you do have to go through a full labor and delivery process, and just remember that just being so miserable and long. And, you know, you walk in with baby in your body and then you leave just empty handed. And I remember when the nurse was talking, that your arms will feel heavy. And I was like, why would my arms feel heavy? But they really do. Like, it was really just like a sense of emptiness, and just such an unfairness that we were leaving the hospital in a completely different state than when we checked in. And then we fast forward to our second loss, which was the spring of 2011. And again, 17 weeks. I kind of just was like having a feeling. I was like, I just don't feel pregnant. My husband's like, clearly look at you. Like, everything on the outside looks fine. I felt fine. I didn't, you know, no issues physically. So I just stopped by the doctor's office and asked if they would do a quick heartbeat check, and they couldn't find one. So again, had to deliver and go through labor. And I just was so miserable at that point. But I guess I started the support group in Colorado.
In between that.
In between, yeah. In between one and two.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember I had found a support group that was just like a generic, like just for general population, but going up against deployments and that military aspect where your husband's coming and going and training, and he's got his own world of war and training and, mm-hmm. you know, getting ready to deploy and stuff. And so I just felt like the support group was great. Like you could sit around and at least talk with women who've gone through those heavy, empty arms. But it was just so different when your spouse is kind of living in a completely different world than like a regular civilian. So I remember vividly in my car, it was like I would be fine at work and I'd be fine at home. But anytime I was in the car alone, I would just be like a sobbing mess. Like it was like the only time I could really cry. And I just remember like crying out, like, God, like lead me to whatever's going to be next. Like I need you. And I can vividly remember hearing his voice say, you need to start a support group. Like this is going to be your thing that you have to do. You can't like expect somebody else to bring it to you. Or you're not going to find it. You need to make it. And I was like, but do you know who I am? I don't know anything about a support group. How do I start this? But I knew I wanted something specific for military wives because you just, you know, in 2011, 12, 13, like that's when kind of the height of deployments were back to back to back and, trainings, you know, if they weren't deployed, they were either training. And if they weren't deployed or training, they were home, you know, for the short window of time, and you had to live your life to the fullest and kind of enjoy what time you had. And so I remember just going to like his leadership in the military and then family services, and just everything just kind of fell into place. We had a wonderful kind of military family counselor who helped set it up. And it was kind of like, here we go. Like, if you build it, they will come. We'll put it out there. And we were prepared for nobody to show up. We were prepared for 10 people to show up. And yeah, I just felt like it was something I needed to do and kind of just that mission that God had given me. And that's luckily when I met Ashley, who had also experienced very similar challenges, but around that same time as well. So again, I was so grateful I was able to do it. We did some fun different. I remember we did some like fun different therapies. We'd done like watercolors.
Yeah, we did like a painting thing.
Yeah, I can't remember some of the different things that they had us do, but they were just so supportive, and it was something that no military installation had started or had done. You know, it was in those times things seemed so taboo. Like you didn't talk about it. It wasn't until I lost that I had people just coming out of the woodworks, or you know, kind of like my parents' generation or my grandparents' generation. That's like when they were like, "Oh yeah, I had several miscarriages," and it was like nobody mentioned this.
No one ever talked about it.
No, nobody ever talked about it. And of course, you know, those older generations, they just didn't talk about it because it was just so different, their experience versus ours. And then you add that element of military and deployment. It's just no two is the same. But I just remember like that, like saved my life, because I was able to grieve with other women and also have the support of, but my husband's gone or he's out of town this week. And I was like just lonely and really grieving. And you could also get that support for an Army wife whose husband are also doing similar things, but just at different times. And yeah, that like really saved my life. It opened up a lot of just opportunities to be able to reach out to people or connect with other people. It felt really rewarding for myself to be able to connect other women and just be able to connect on a different level. Oh, And at that time, their SHARE organization, which is a national support group, they were out there, but it wasn't as involved. Like now, I feel like you can Google infant loss or pregnancy loss, anything like that. And there's a lot more resources out there now. But at the beginning, there really wasn't a lot of resources or support. And so this was just kind of like that firm backbone that I had to rely on. And then since starting the support group, I did end up losing another baby. And that loss just felt so different because I do, like Ashley and Nicole like came over and brought me like this support, like this little care package.
We made you like monster cookies?
Yes.
Aww.
Yeah. And if it wasn't, for putting my, following my faith for one and putting myself out there and following like what I felt like I needed internally, I wouldn't have had that experience the second time. And so I think that learning experience was like, this is what I want to be able to provide for the next person. And since then, God has just placed so many other women and even husbands too, because husbands go through it in such a different way. But it's really just allowed me to be able to kind of minister to other people and just really share my faith. And hopefully the tears that I have cried has prevented the next person from knowing that they can, or giving the next person just that will to know that you can get through it and you can cry it out and you're going to be okay. Life just moves right on. Mm-hmm. So
I can't imagine. Ugh.
I don't even really vividly remember where I even got the email from, like announcing the group. And like, I was like, I don't know if I should do this or not. And then showing up, and there literally was like, I think five of us. There was like one girl who was just like, so very new. We may have scared her off, to be honest.
Yeah, she came once.
Yeah, once. So then the remainder of it was like the four of us. You, Nicole, Jessica, and me. But yeah, like we would just having other people, even though it was very different. We all had very different stories. But a lot of the feelings were the same. A lot of the feelings of feeling like a failure as a mom, mm-hmm. that our bodies failed our children. We, a lot of guilt and mm-hmm. having everyone there as a sounding board, to be on, to feel like someone's on your side, somebody gets you, somebody sees you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was intense, but mm-hmm. a lot of tears.
A lot of tears.
We could talk about our fears and, all the horrible things people would say, trying to be kind. Like we would just, and having that, the counselor there to just mm-hmm. give us the freedom to do that.
Yeah. And she never told us like, oh, it's fine. Or, she never like tried to patch it over, because I feel like a lot of friends were like, oh, at least your baby's in a better place. And it's like, I mean, yes, that is the truth, but that is not what you want to hear. Like your heart is bleeding and mm-hmm. hear, the one-liners that people I know like probably meant well-intended.
Mm-hmm.
Like that counselor, she was so supportive and she just like gave us that room and that mm-hmm. opportunity to think we failed, just for a minute, like without mm-hmm. somebody saying, oh no, you didn't fail. You're fine. Mm-hmm. She didn't kind of placate us, which I loved that we had those moments to say the ugly truth to each other that they knew what we meant.
Yeah. And then at the end of it, the demise of our group is because they try to switch everything up on us and bring somebody else in.
Mm-hmm.
Our counselor left.
Yeah, that did not work.
No, but I think that was, it was also kind of important for us because it gave us a platform to stand up for ourselves and what other women needed like us. Cause what they wanted to do was mm-hmm. bring someone in and kind of make it like a course on grief, mm-hmm. kind of like,
there's a start and finish. Yeah.
A start and finish and then send you on your way. That's very army of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember drafting a very heartfelt and passionate email on behalf of all four of us.
Mm-hmm. And that was the demise of our group in that sense. But, you know, we were bonded already. So we just became a little support group. So we have a nice little tradition. We've kind of fallen off a little bit, but every time it's one of the kids' birthdays, we all get ice cream and then send pictures of us eating the ice cream. Because we would used to go out and get it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've since all dispersed from Colorado, and then some of us have come back.
Some of us, yeah. And then about to leave again. So yeah, that was definitely, I think, a very effective part of our healing and our journey. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Yes, absolutely. It wasn't me. It, you know, like I said, I was just trying to be obedient to my faith and, you know, God just like put it all together. Cause like I said, I wasn't like, how do I put a support group together? How do I put it out there? How do we lead it? How do we, you know, luckily just all fell in place.
Yeah. So what happened next for you?
Fast forward many a years, I'm back in Montana. I had since gone through a divorce. And kind of started a new life. I was back into politics and life was very full, did a lot of traveling, did a lot of healing. It was going through a divorce. It was not something I wanted. It was just something I was forced to kind of go along with. And I think it was another loss for one, but it kind of brought up all the other losses. And, you know, that's who I went through the depths of pain with, was my first husband. And we'd gone through so much. We'd grown so much. We got married really, really young. He had deployed so many times. He had we had lost friends. And so it just kind of brought up the loss all over again. And it just was painful on a different level. I remember like the first couple anniversaries of anniversaries of when the babies had passed. And those were just so, it was just more raw, I think, post-divorce. And then just kind of time it healed, like they say, like with time, it will get easier as much as you don't think that's true when you're actually in the midst of it. Just did a lot of healing. Of course, I'd met a lot of wonderful women during that time. Cause it's like once you're a loss mom, you have friends that'll say, hey, I had a friend that actually went through the same thing. Do you mind reaching out to her? Are you comfortable with them reaching out to you? And in that time, God had just placed so many wonderful women in my life. And we all kind of keep in touch at different times and, you know, anniversaries, of course, are really bittersweet for all of us. But I remember I met a mom in Montana who had lost triplets. Kind of that's right around the third trimester and just couldn't stop delivery and babies just weren't ready. And, you know, triplets, you know, naturally were challenging. And I remember meeting her for the first time. And it was just like an instant love and bond that you have with a woman when she's gone through the same thing. And she was just so raw. It was probably like within the first year that she had lost. And at that point I was like, this is my mission, to reach out to women and to be there for women and cry with them and support them. And it's kind of been from that point on that I've really sought out other women. Or, you know, if you see something on social media of so-and-so's lost, or I just would feel like I have to reach out to them and let them know, like, throw those china dishes against the wall and eat pizza, do whatever you need to do to get through 24 hours at a time, because you're not alone. You're not the first one. So I kind of went through a phase of just doing that. I was, you know, recovering from a divorce and just doing a lot of healing and kind of moving on with life. Fast forward to getting remarried and then trying to have family. And we lost two boys again. Separately, but again in that 17th week. But it was a different loss with a different experience with my husband, because he was so strong in his faith. He was so strong. You know, we were just older. For one, we were older. For two, there wasn't that element of deployment around every corner. And our faith had just grown during that time and then before, mm-hmm. Kind of what we had gone through individually to get to that point. And our church had rallied around us, our friends, and we felt so close to our community. And that was people near and far kind of community. But I remember coming home that first night of our third loss, and my husband said, I feel so close to God, I feel like I can reach out and touch him. And I was like, if that is the only sweet thing that happens from this loss, then like, God, your plan is so much bigger and greater than mine. But for my husband to be able to experience that intimacy with God and just his faith and feel so mm-hmm. comforted in like one of the deepest, darkest moments of our life, it just made so much, it just was a slice of peace in such a miserable time.
Did you have fear though of how he would react versus your first husband? Like, did it kind of like bring up a lot of those things?
Oh yeah, it did. And I remember like, I don't even know if I had told my husband this, but I remember thinking like it kind of made me miss my first husband because like it's something we had gone through before. I knew how he was going to respond. I knew how, you know, my first husband would be and or not be. And my husband, Michael, is such a big-hearted, lovey-dovey person that sometimes he was more emotional than I was, which was a different experience. But it was more of an intimate experience, you know, through our marriage and through our faith. And so it just was almost like more beautiful, I think, because we were able to feel more and God had like shown up in so many different ways. I mean, from like the nurse that came in, like humming some hymn in her head and being able to show our faith to the other nurses and just kind of being able to walk out our faith to other people, to how wonderful the staff was. And like those OB nurses we had, they're family now. Like we're more than just Facebook friends, but we keep in touch and, you know, they love on us and we love them and their families. So we had grown a lot that way. But yeah, there was a lot of... again, it just kind of like brings up all your losses again, like what kind of brought up emotions of my divorce and then brought up emotions of our first two losses. And then just a lot of like, okay, so this probably is something my body is doing. And then the guilt of like where my body is failing and why is this happening to me again? And what did I do wrong? That whole like, what did I do wrong? Self-blaming, shaming, emotions were certainly running strong. But I remember when I first found out about my third pregnancy, I was like, Lord, I am not going to live in fear this whole pregnancy. Like I cannot do it. And I just remember 2 Timothy 1:7, you know, that God has given us a spirit of a sound mind and a power and of love and not a spirit of fear. And I just remember going back to that anytime I would feel anxious or worried or any sort of doubt. And it just was a choice that day that I saw the positive pregnancy test. It was like, I cannot go 9 months of, you know, just that paralyzing fear. And God took care of it with all the anxieties. I mean, of course, there's moments where you worry and, you know, I'm still human and still my flesh will certainly fail me. But felt very peaceful through that. I know I had like support with you and Nicole and Jess. Everybody was reaching out and just being supportive, during the good weeks and then, after we lost. But fast forward, lose another pregnancy right before COVID happened and kind of shut the world down. And that was when I was like, we're done. Like, I'm done. We're getting a dog. We're not going to expand our family. Like I had never felt so defeated. Like I can't handle any more emotional loss, failure. I was like, send me to a rehab center for something. Like, I don't even know what it would be for, exhaustion or I don't know. But I was just like, I can't, I'm done. Like,
so in total, how many did that make?
So we've lost 4 in the 17th week. And then I've had 2 miscarriages, like real early on, miss like 6 weeks, 7 week, 8 week.
Goodness.
So yeah, so this is.
Girl, you are strong.
Well,
you're strong.
I'm as strong as my support, which is faith and family. So
yes, that's amazing to see.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. And we do give all the glory. And was just listening to a song this morning. It's talking about like in the waiting and in the healing, God gets the glory.
Absolutely.
And that's just how we, how we stand. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Just makes you stronger, makes your faith stronger, your relationship with God stronger.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you saw so much growth within all that time.
Oh my gosh. And I like at different times I've been a really avid journaler. I'm in a season of no journaling right now.
Right.
but I've gone back and even like reread some stuff or, you know, seen like videos or photos on my phone of just the growth that I've made just as myself, like just as a woman and as a mom and as a, just as a human. And then my faith has just grown exponentially since going through all this. And I'm so grateful for that growth because since my 4 losses, my mom has been diagnosed with a glioblastoma brain cancer.
Oh my goodness.
And so sorry. And it's a very, thank you. It's a very similar feeling of like, you're completely out of control. This is all in God's hands.
Yep.
There's a lot of medical miracles happening. But I have not lived in, it'll be 2 years in February since my mom was diagnosed. And not a day have I been living in paralyzed fear or anxiety because I'm just like, whatever it is, Lord, you've got a plan. Luckily, it's just been very pain-free for the most part. So there hasn't been a lot of misery that way, but it's just, yeah, we've just prayed through it and we've been
living in faith.
Living in faith. Yeah, it's... going through these kind of things has certainly made you walk your faith out. You know, when you're waiting for those test results or you're waiting for, you know, 6-hour surgery for your mom, or you're waiting to get past that 17th week, you really are living out your faith. That's when you're.
There's a test in every testimony.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, we've had many of those.
It's amazing to see, though, how strong it has made you.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like I hear that a lot from women. They're like, you're the strongest person I know. And I'm like,
all the glory to God.
Right.
But,
I'm like, for one, like, it's really not my strength they're seeing.
Yes.
And
yes.
For two, like, I have sobbed my pillow wet in bed. Like, it's not all glorious.
Right.
And one thing I really struggled with my 3rd loss was just like depression and anxiety. And I remember it was like, I don't know, within a week of delivery, I had really bad. It seems like my deliveries have just gotten worse over time. This last time I ended up in the OR and it just was not good. But with my 3rd one, I just had a lot of bleeding. And so they were like worried that maybe there was like still placenta or something in there and they'd have to go back in. And I just was like, I just like shut down. And I remember going to my doctor's office just for a checkup and they wanted to do another ultrasound. And I was like, I don't want to do an ultrasound because things are still like bleeding and healing. Like, don't touch me. Yeah. And I just was laying on the bed in the doctor's room. And he was like, you know, I think it's time we talk about maybe getting on medication. And I was like, that was just like the worst thing he could have said. Cause I was like, I failed even more. And like, I can't do anything right. And, my husband was like, yes, let's just try it. And mm-hmm. I remember, like, I wouldn't even pick it up. I mean, my husband would go to the pharmacy, pick it up, because I was like, I don't want to have anything to do with this. I'll take the dang pill. And it was, like, within days. Like, I was able to sleep without taking any sleep medication, like, over the counter. And I just – that was the best decision I've ever made in my life, was to allow that opportunity, because I just looked at it as, like, a weakness and, like, something that I couldn't overcome.
Yeah.
And it was my own self. It wasn't anybody telling me, like, oh, you shouldn't do it. Like, my family was super supportive and, you know, whatever you need to do to get through this, and just one day at a time, and if this helps, then do it. And now I'm the biggest advocate, of course, for women and working moms and, you know, just that powerhouse women of, like, you don't have to do it all on your own. And, you know, between my faith and luckily, you know, living in times that pharmaceuticals can help, I now am a big advocate of, don't look at it as such a weakness and such a, like, it's not grace. I mean, it's to provide support as well. So that was another huge lesson I learned.
Ooh. You bring up stuff. So how did you, or if you didn't, how did you get through the questions, the, are you guys going to have kids? Are you going to try again? Or, like, it's like, you don't know my story. Mm. You don't know all that entails. You don't know that I'm holding my breath, you know, for 9 months.
I know. Yeah. There's a lot of that, especially, like I said, I have been so blessed with a stepdaughter who has just loved and embraced me from day one. Never have had a challenge, like, never been told, like, you're not my mom. And just have been loved from day one. So, of course, then I get a lot of questions of, like, oh, she's now, you know, she's going to be 14. But there was certainly, like, the times where she was, like, 9, 10, 11. People are like, oh, but do you have, are you going to have more kids? Do you have more kids? And I'm like, you don't have time for my answer. Mm-hmm. But then you're almost like, you want to be like, but I have four. They just happen to live in heaven. Like, there's such that, how do you respond, you know, or, you know, like, at work meetings, like, you meet somebody new. It's like, oh, are you married? Do you have kids? Oh, you haven't had kids yet. Like, there's a lot of silly questions that I'm guilty of even asking other people as well. But I think after lots of trial and error, I just keep it simple for the person that's asking me the question, because, like, I know my truth. I know how many kids I've had. I know where four of my children are. But I know if I was to say that to somebody, it's then, like, almost they get uncomfortable. And then it's like, I have to comfort them in the uncomfortableness because they're dealing with it. And so I've kind of just gotten to the point where I just keep it simple. And, you know, as I get to know somebody, of course, they're going to end up finding out, because it's a huge part of my life. And, I mean, it's a huge part of, like, our social media presence. We support a lot of organizations that support women, or, you know, we work at the Ramsey Keller Foundation here in Montana. They raise monies for baby loss, funeral costs, et cetera. And we just do a lot of activities and stuff that support that. We like to share our story a little bit on social media, just not necessarily to get the attention from people, but just to know, to put ourselves out there so other people know that, you know, if they're in the silent grieving, it's not just them. Yep.
Do you still, like, now? I know that, like, some women don't want to acknowledge it at all, and, you know, they'll put all this stuff away. While there's nothing wrong with that, I know that is different for you and me. And, like, you know, obviously, like you just said, you, depending on who's asking, you don't give your whole long story. Mm-hmm. But do you say, yes, I've had, you know, sometimes I've had these boys, their names are this.
I think, over time, I mean, especially, like, friends that I've had, you know, for a long time, and they get pregnant, and they'll mention like, oh, I felt like this or I experienced that. I certainly don't reserve, like, I'll be like, oh yeah, I remember when I had that or my first trimester and like my cravings were this. I think I speak more about the boys' names, probably more just like within the family, you know, whether that's or just real loved ones will say like, oh, it's so-and-so's birthday or this was the anniversary of when we lost this baby. And then even like with my husband and I, it was like, life things will happen and be like, was that before we lost Roman or was that after we lost Roman? Or it's kind of like a marker in time and in our life of like, you know, was that something we did? Remember that one trip we went on after we lost Reggie? It's like we use their names really frequently in our house, especially our 14-year-old. She shares a birthday month with one of them. And so the month of November is, of mm-hmm. course, her birthday month and a baby Roman's birthday month. And so she makes it very known and she speaks about it and she, you know, celebrates it. She loves that they share the same month. She loves that they share the same birthstone. So some things are a little bit more free that way. And then on social media, we certainly share their names, but yeah, I guess I don't, like, I never really thought about mm-hmm. that, but not, you know, I guess I'll bring it up if somebody, and sometimes women will ask like, did you name your babies? And that's when I'm like, absolutely. And we named them this, and this is why we named them that. And we've been, yeah, open that way. But I think we're more open once somebody asks.
Do you think it's important to name each child?
I do. We've had a couple of miscarriages as well. And they've been super, super early. And so like, we just call them like baby peas just because we don't know what they are. Like gender wise, mm-hmm. we're like really assign a name, but it's been a huge part of our grief, you know, just processing, like being able to call them a name and like they had a life. And for the longest time I would live in the, what would they be doing today? Or like Halloween's coming up. Such a huge reminder of when you don't have a child of, mm-hmm. You know, this year a baby would have been 4 years old. So it's like, what would a 4 year old be? And like, is that what our baby would have been? And how fun would that? Like, I used to live in that mindset. And it wasn't mm-hmm. until a country singer had lost his baby to a drowning accident. And mm-hmm. he said, him and his wife were real strong in their faith. And they came out and said, like, we are refusing to live in the what ifs. We are living in God gave our baby 3,000, however many days it was that they had their baby. And that was the extent of the child's life. Baby wasn't supposed to be, the baby was never supposed to be 10 years old. The baby's never supposed to be married, was never supposed to go to college, never supposed to get married, like never supposed to have that, because God's plan was for that baby to have 3,000 and some days. And so we're not going to live in the what if. And as soon as I heard that, it like gave me the freedom to not spend and waste so much of my time and heartache of the what ifs. And so since that moment, and that was between our third and fourth loss, since that moment, I have just felt so passionate about my babies. They were not robbed of time. I was not robbed of time because their life was what God's plan was. And if that was 17 weeks in utero or 17 years or 75 years old, that's what God had given us. And that is a blessing in itself. And so that had really changed our mindset. So that's what we love to be able to say, like, Roman, you know, brought us this and taught us that. And because of Roman, we are X, Y, and Z. And same with Reggie, like, because of Reggie, we have grown this way and we've learned that and we've met this person. And it's because God had given us those babies for 17 weeks, not a moment longer, not a moment less, but that's what God's plan was. And it's same like with my mom's cancer, like God wasn't surprised when she got diagnosed. He knew that was going to happen and he is just supporting us through it. And he's blessed us 10 times over what I thought he could have in such a trial with all this loss and experience we've gone through. So yeah, we're passionate about naming. Some people don't, and it's, you know, I think it's to each their own. You make the decisions you make in that moment. And I don't, I've made no decision that I've doubted or regretted, just because I was like, okay, I got to make this decision in this moment. And knowing what we know in that moment and how we're feeling in that moment. And that was that moment's decision. And we just, you can choose to live in regret, or you can feel a regret. And of course the enemy is always wanting you to doubt God and doubt your faith and doubt, you know, the perfection. But we've just made a decision. Like, we don't want to live in the regret or the why did we do this, or we should have done that. The shoulda, coulda, woulda. It's like we just choose to celebrate their lives and their names and how we got their names. And Roman Michael was pretty much, my husband chose that name, and it was something he was reading in the book of Romans, in the Bible, and that's the name that kind of came to his mind. And then Reggie Lambeau was something my dad kind of came up with, like, jokingly during pregnancy. And so, like, that just stuck, and we just love that, like, my dad was able to name that baby, and that's a memory we're always going to have, you know, whether we always have my dad here on earth or not. So yeah, we're very passionate about that.
So first and foremost, thank you so much for sharing your story. I know it's not always easy to bring it up, and it's been amazing to see how much strength you have now and how much willingness you have to talk about it. Is there anything that you would love to share to tell other women that are possibly listening out there that have experienced this recently? Any advice you would give them?
Gosh, I feel like I have a lot, but nothing to say at the same time. I mean, everything you know, like, whatever, you know, eat that comfort food if you have to, and throw the dishes against the wall out of frustration and anger. I know, you know, a lot of people will say, like, don't question God. Like, who are we to question God? I have asked him why so many times, and you can bet when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask him even more. So I think it's okay. Like, you're a human, and you know, God's shoulders are big enough for us to wonder and question. I mean, so I just think, you know, just be real with yourself, with your family and your loved ones, but also with your faith too. Like, it's, nothing's perfect. We're not perfect. And yeah, just, I also recommend just, you know, like, self-care, whether that's, you know, massages or taking care of yourself, whatever, you know, sitting outside for 10 minutes, just in fresh air. I remember when my nurse told me that, and I was like, I don't want to sit outside. Like, I don't want to. And she's like, just go do it.
Right.
Well, I did it, and I did feel better. So, I mean, anything from just getting up, making your bed, brushing your teeth, sitting outside, to, you know, growing in your faith or talking about it with other women or just reaching out to resources, you know, whether that's your pastor or your best friend or your mom or, you know, once you lose a baby, there's going to be somebody that's going to come and say, you know, I've gone through this too, or I know somebody else too. So just relying on that community, and allow people to love you. People want to love on you. People want to take care of you. They want to bring you a meal. They want to bring you, you know, snacks. They want to clean your home. They want to whatever. And just allowing yourself to be loved on and cared for and taken care of by other people. Because I know it's easy to just want to close in and, like, no, I got this. I'm fine. I can, you know, juggle all these balls, and I can grieve, and I can move on.
Right.
And it's okay.
I was going to say, like, letting women know that it's okay to reach out and that there's nothing wrong with them if they feel that they need to reach out.
Yeah, because the other side of that is, like, I love taking a meal to somebody. I love being able to love on somebody else or reach out or bless somebody else. So another book I read was It's Okay to Not Be Okay by Lisa Takehurst. And that was something that I read in a timely manner. And I was just talking about that. And, you know, we don't always have to be okay. And that's okay. Like, you can give yourself – I remember my third loss, I would, like, be at work and I could feel like a meltdown was coming. And for the first time, I was like, okay, I'm going home, went home, like, had a meltdown, ate some lunch, and, like, was able to, like, feel like I could carry on and go finish off the day. Old me would have been like, you're fine, tuck it away. Nobody's got time for a meltdown, but.
Don't make other people uncomfortable. Yes,
don't make other people uncomfortable. Yeah.
Right.
It's all about other people and just maintaining that like perfectionist persona that's so unattainable and so not realistic. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would definitely add to that of, and as you said, what you were saying, I was like, oh, right. I remember after mine, I didn't want to go back to church because I was wrestling with my own anger at God and whatnot. And now, you know, this many years later, and because someone else was saying it to me that God cares more about your heart. And it's like you said, he can handle your questions. He can handle your anger. He can handle all of that. Mm-hmm. And it's okay. It's okay to not be okay. And I think it's kind of like something that was like kind of deep inside of us already. And then when we got together as a support group, having that confirmation that you're like, okay, like it's okay. It's okay to not be okay. It's okay to be a little irrational sometimes in our responses. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's okay that there is no right way to grieve. At all. And it's going to be different for every single person.
No,
it's going to be, you're going to grieve differently for every single child that you lost because they are an individual person. Just as if, you know, if you have, you know, other family members that you've had all your life or friends, they're an individual person and it's okay to grieve them differently. Mm-hmm. So I think if, you know, combining all of our advice on the subject, I hope that this helped any of our listeners who have gone through it. If they know someone who's going through it and you want to share this episode, are you okay if people reach out to you? And if so, where do you want them to reach out?
Absolutely. Oh man. I am passionate about helping other women, you know, and that can be talking or texting or, you know, I know it's not always easy to reach out for help or ask for support. Instagram's probably the easiest. I mean, I would give you my phone number, but I don't know if that's what you want.
We don't know who's listening, to be honest. We have no idea. Yeah. Because I think people listen in other countries. So we don't know.
Yeah. I don't know if I would necessarily put my number out there. But an email address, Instagram handle.
Yeah, Instagram. Yeah, I only speak English, so I can't do much outside of that. but yeah, Instagram is just Allison from MT. So Allison from MT from Montana. Yeah, would love.
Or even being a listening ear.
I hope I can. That's my goal is like I want to be able to help the next person, whether that's just get through another day or get through another hour. I'm happy. And there's been a lot of people I've reached out on Facebook, like so-and-so mentioned you'd lost. Here's my number, call, text, email, morning, noon, or night. Just being able to be there, be a resource, be a something to be encouraged by is what I strive to be for other people.
How many people actually took you up on that?
I would say probably over time, probably like 15 to 20 women have.
Yeah. Is that like a small percentage of all the people you reached out to?
75% will reach back out. And sometimes it's just like a one or two text message exchange. Sometimes it's a phone call. Sometimes, you know, some have turned into lifelong friends. I mean, it's just kind of whatever works for that person, you know. They just want to hear what I've been through to help them. It's kind of a wide range. And some ask a lot of questions. Some ask no questions. Nobody grieves the same. Nobody feels the same. Just kind of a mixed bag.
Yeah, definitely want it known. Like, even if you personally, if you're in the place where you want to reach out to other people too, like it's okay if they don't reach out back. Like if they ignore you, like I think just knowing, because a friend told me this one time, like when she was having you know, her daughter was in the hospital and whatnot. Like, she had a friend call, and obviously she ignored it, but she just left a message, and it's like, I just want you to hear my voice. I just want you to know I'm here for you. You're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
Just hearing those things or reading those types of messages so they know, but having no expectations yep. whatsoever. I think that's so helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do. I get some friends that'll be like, so-and-so, you know, what, my friend or my cousin, whatever has lost, what do I do? And so those are the people that I'm like, definitely text, you know, because they'll be like, we don't want to bother them. We don't want to burden them. I'm like, shoot them a text. They don't respond. They're at least going to read it. They'll respond when they, you know, when they can. And it's not about you. It's not about if they respond mm-hmm. to you or how they react to you. But I certainly highly encourage people to reach out. Yeah, like you said, reach out with no expectation and just be able to provide that proof that you care
yeah.
and that they matter.
Cause you kind of just want to be seen in your grief too, you know that like, I mean, it kind of mm-hmm. just goes back to like,
yeah.
you, I think that's kind of like the real life on earth thing of like, if you, I'm personally kind of like, I need audible, I need like visual types of things. Cause sometimes it's mm-hmm. just like, God, where are you? Why are you not giving me answers? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to hear from you. And so,
right.
Hearing and seeing that people see you, God can work through other Absolutely. People. So if you are looking for that voice from Him, if you're looking for, you know, those things, and like, you, that's what you need. You need to see those words. You need to know that God is there. God uses other people. He works through other people, just so you know you're not alone. Okay, do your Instagram one more time where everyone can find you.
Allison from MT. AllisonFromMT.
Because she's from Montana.
Montana.
God's country.
God's country.
I'm so jealous. You might get a visitor one day.
Please do. Please do.
Okay, where can we find you, Amber? It.
You can find me at Amber_N_G on Instagram. Where can they find you at, Ash?
I have no idea. I got to throw that in sometime to break it up. You can find me at ashley.reed, and you can find us at Uncommon Faith Podcast, now on TikTok. Yay! It finally happened. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I don't know what you're going to see over there.
You're on the TikTok.
I don't know what you're going to
huh?
see over there, but... because it's already a lot to do everything else. So, but you know, if you're a TikToker versus Instagram, you got something to see over there. And you can email us at uncommonfaithpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks, friend. Thanks for coming on and sharing.
Yes.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
All right. Until next time, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. I'm not the one who's always right.